Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, I am so delighted to be back with you. And after several weeks, I met for the first time Jason over here, who's been attending with us about 6 weeks. I'm like, hey, I saw you last week. Was that your first week here? And he's like, no, I've actually been here for about 6 weeks. I'm like, wow, I've been gone a while. So I am really delighted to be back with you. Well, what I'm going to do this morning is to give a brief report of the Zambia trip. I'm calling Zambia 2017. And for those of you who've been around a while, you know that I've been going to Zambia for about 11 years, off and on. Last time I was there, I believe, was 3 years ago, if my accounting is right. But it's been quite a while. And I received an email just the other day to schedule again to go back in 2019, basically going there every other year as it is. Still working through my schedule on that. But Zambia 2017, let me tell you a little bit just to jump right in. Zambia, for those of you who may not know, because I had never heard of Zambia. How many of you have never heard of Zambia before apart from, hey, Stephen's in Zambia? No, there's an honest one back over there. There's more of you honest than that, I know. But when I first heard about Zambia, when I heard the name, I'd never heard of it. I think probably I didn't pay attention in school or I didn't get taught about Zambia. As a matter of fact, it wasn't until I went to Zambia that it dawned on me. Well, it didn't dawn on me. I was corrected about it, that Africa is not a nation. Africa is a continent. And that all of these little places on here are their own individual nations. And show you what a failure of a world traveler I am. I went into South Africa, down here in the southernmost tip, into Johannesburg on my first trip, and my companion that you'll meet here, James, we were talking about the flight that we needed to take up into Zambia, and he said, here we go, we need to go down this way, the international flights. I'm like, we're not going international, we're going to Africa. He's like, well, you know, Zambia is another nation other than South Africa, and I'm like, no, I didn't know that. So I've learned a little bit about Africa and Zambia during that since that time. But that let me tell you just briefly how I got there in the first place 11 years ago. When we were in the early days of our church, our family had gone up back to Louisville, our planting church, Reformed Baptist Church of Louisville. And I was there with James Williamson, again, that some of you will meet for the first time on these slides. And I can't remember why I was there or what was going on or even where it was, but it was 11 years ago, so it's been since the planting of our church. But we found ourselves in a Sunday school in which a fellow by the name of Lenny Byerly, who was a pastor up in the Northeast, told us of a trip. And I don't even know why he was teaching Sunday school, but part of what he was doing there was giving a report of his Zambia trip. And the short story is, I'm a pastor in the Northeast. I had a Zambian show up on my doorstep. He asked me to help sponsor him. He moved back with his family. I went there to travel to see if this guy was legit. And while I was there, I almost died, and I'm never going back. So would any of you like to go on my behalf to go check this guy out? So James and I kind of looked at one another and said, yeah, I guess we'll go. And we went up and talked to him afterwards, and we ended up, later that year, going to Zambia. Up to that point, I had been out of the country to the Philippines and Cuba and Haiti. I thought, well, I could probably do this, and so that's what sent us on into Africa, into Zambia. And so what you find here, here's southern Africa, sub-Saharan Africa down here, and you'll see Zambia, Angola, Tanzania, Congo, Malawi. The places where I go to teach, as you'll see, I teach in two different pastors' colleges. They come from some of these different neighboring nations. Most of them are Zambia. For instance, there was a brother from, where was he from? I think he was from Tanzania this time. But usually there's one or two pastors from outside the country sprinkled in. But you'll see it's on the southern part. And what I do is I fly from Nashville to Washington, from Washington usually to Dakar. This time I went up into Ghana, my first time into Ghana, and I don't see Yao, but Yao's from Ghana originally, up under here, and then from Ghana down to Johannesburg, South Africa, then some from South Africa up into Lusaka, the capital city of Zambia, which is about a total of 32 hours of travel from start to finish, and that means eating and sleeping and doing other things on the plane trip. Just by way of reference, depending on how the winds are blowing, the trip from here to here can be longer than from Africa to Washington. That's how big Africa is. It's just it's huge. It's just humongous. So even that trip, I think, is an 8.5-9 hour trip from that from Ghana down to South Africa. Now this is Zambia, and you'll see the capital city here of Lusaka. When we first started going, we went up into this area. Actually, the first city we went to go check this this man out was in Luansha, which is right here. But this is known as the Copper Belt. They're very well known for copper, and kind of the brief history is they used to be a British colony. They got independence, their first presidency, basically sold off the mines to foreign investors without any kind of a return value. And so now we have they have other nations like India and China who own mines and who come in and get all of the wealth out, especially the copper. And if you are in the building industry at all, you know copper is a massively profitable commodity right now. And so Zambia has natural resources, but the country itself gets almost nothing. Oh, by the way, the president sold the mines to foreign investors and took himself the money mostly, but didn't give it back to Zambia. So this is the Copper Belt up in here, Chingola, Kitwe, Ndola, Luansha, Sowezi. I've traveled up in all of these areas. That's where we started the work that we'll talk about, Copper Belt Ministerial College. But over the past several years, then I've also traveled to Lusaka, which is the capital city, which if you went into it, it's a very small scale but modern kind of a city. There are restaurants, there's Wi-Fi, there are mega malls, there are those kind of things. But you'll have that kind of wealth contrasted in the cities with a lot of foreigners, a lot of Muslims, a lot of Indians and Chinese and Japanese, a lot of people coming in. But you don't have to go very far out in any direction to get into really, really primitive bush areas where there's no electricity. Everything is genuinely primitive all over the country. So you've got some hot spots of areas that, even in the 11 years that I've gone, have really significantly progressed, if that's what progress looks like, but that have changed over those 11 years. So I'll come in from Johannesburg, South Africa. This time, my trip is pretty simple. I went into Lusaka, basically to preach and teach for a week, and then up into Ndola to preach and teach for a week. And there's a kind of a closer up view of that, but that's the Copper Belt up there, named for obvious reasons. All right, so these are the two men that were my chauffeurs. This is Kasongo and Peter of Nigeria is where he's from. I was trying to think of where Peter was from, but he's from Nigeria. And I showed up the first day, and I knew I was going to do some kind of a seminar, I was told, on Saturday. So I left out, got there on a Friday night, Saturday, had a seminar that I went to. It was in what are called the compounds areas, which is basically... To use just the term we would use, like the slum areas, the poorest of the poor, the most violent of the violent, the lot of drunkenness, alcoholism, AIDS is very, it's a pandemic there, though it's gotten better over the past 11 years that I've gone. But this was in a compound area, and it was an invitation to local pastors to come to the seminar with this white guy, which I got there, and there was this poster, and I thought, well, I don't know if I've been on a poster before. That's pretty cool. And so we're driving through these neighborhoods, and they don't know where we're going. And he's a pastor, by the way. He's a ministerial student who has studied under Peter Masters in England and has been all over doing his studies. But he's now at this particular college. So these were my chauffeurs of the week. Everywhere I went, they drove me. They took care of me. And as we were driving through the compound areas, and this is really, again, this is inner city, slum, brokenness, poverty, and it became clear they didn't know where we were going, where the church was. We're just trying to drive around. And so then I'm just kind of looking around at the sites and wondering where we're headed. And I looked over and I saw a poster of about this size, this exact same thing, on a wall in front of a church. And as we're driving by, my eye just caught it. I thought, was that me? And I hadn't seen this poster yet. I thought, there's a big white guy on that sign. I think that was me. I said, could that be the place? And they looked back and they said, yes, that's the place. So we pulled over. I was like, well, good. And so there's the actual which when I stepped out here and pointed to it, you know, all the kids came up and pointed and laughed, you know, which I thought was pretty funny, too. I'm in a T-shirt and jeans because they lost my luggage coming into Lusaka, so I had to hand wash all my stuff and go there the next day. And there's no better way that you want to be dressed when you meet the what World Magazine has called the Spurgeon of Africa. Not the Spurgeon of Zambia, but the modern Spurgeon of Africa. This is Conrad Mbewe, a friend and brother. So I'm there, and he's waiting there with a camera. And these are pretty formal Reformed Baptist folks. So I come up in a T-shirt and jeans, and immediately I'm like, I'm sorry. My luggage was lost. And he posted it on Facebook and made a joke about it. So here you are in a T-shirt getting ready to preach, you know. So it was obviously a big deal. So this is Conrad Mbewe. The last time I went, I stayed with Conrad. He was actually here in Nashville while I was there. The first 3 days, the worship conference with Keith and Kristen Getty, he spoke at that. So I was here speaking at the compounds. He was here speaking in Nashville. So this is the church. This is this seminar, which come to find out was a recruiting tool is what it was. So they asked me to speak on the importance of sound doctrine and believing the Bible. And what it really was here's the importance of sound doctrine and why you need to go to our school to get it, basically, which is fine. It was what it was. I didn't know until the night before really what it was or what I was supposed to do. But went in, and you'll see the women and children sitting over here on the side. And then you'll see the men. By the way, that's Ben. He is the administrator of the LMC, Lusaka Ministerial College. He and I ended up becoming very good friends. He's an excellent administrator. I had not met him before. The man that was here, was there 3 years ago, was a super nice guy, but not a great administrator. Ben here really did a great job overseeing the whole module. So these are some of the men that came, and some of them ended up becoming students through this. So there's the other section over here. So several of these men are recognized as being students, but they listened. And this was a fairly nice church building. This was, as I say, in the compounds. It's actually, I can't remember what it was. That's Baptist. Okay. I can't remember what the first part of the name was. But if you zoom in here, you can find that it's actually a fairly charismatic church. And not just charismatic, but highly Pentecostal. You'll see 70 days of divine visitation. Man, I want to go to that meeting. Salvation, breakthrough, restoration, deliverance, healing and miracles and victory. A lot of sincere folks within this movement, but there's a lot of charlatans also involved who get rich and wealthy because they learn the techniques of the health, wealth, and prosperity and then take from the poor. This is right in the middle of some of the deepest brokenness and poverty that there is in Africa. Okay, so this is down just the side of the property, just giving you a view. I'd finished teaching and came out and just thought that was a beautiful shot. I did the seminar there. There's the whole group. See if you can find Waldo. Does anybody know where? I know. I'm particularly good at really blending in with people. And I'm a good chameleon. So, in case you didn't see me, So that's the crew. So I stayed at Nomad's Lodge while there. I've gone from staying in. Under mosquito nets, sleeping with James in the same bed the first year, to now going to Nomad's Lodge, which is a little embarrassing, but they take care of us. This is this would be considered a very well-to-do street, very cultivated. You'll see walls up around everything, glass on top. Where there's poverty, of course, there's a lot of crime. Okay, and there's one of my first meals. That was the best fish I've ever had in Zambia. They tend to overcook their fish, and for my taste, this one was actually, the meat fell off the bones, and you could actually get in behind the head and get some of the best meat out of there, and that doesn't bother me anymore. But this is fish and chips. And then there's some Zambian coffee, and I obtained a Batman mug while I was there. in honor of Tyler, and a press pot, a new little press pot. So the first place, so that was on Saturday. On Sunday, I went to Evangel Baptist Church, which was a pretty well-to-do. Some of the churches I've preached in here, you'll see, are very pretty well-to-do. And Reformed Baptist churches there tend to attract kind of white-collar doctors, accountants, engineers, fairly English-speaking, well-educated. You'll see this is a pretty well-to-do church. And this isn't a complaint, but it's the only church I've ever been to in Zambia where they actually paid me something. And I never ask, it's not expected or anything like that, but they paid me the equivalent of $140 to preach, which is shows you how wealthy that church was. It was astounding. They also have outreaches into the compound areas. They bring children in. The children are so different than their children. They have their separate Sunday school class. They care for them. They bring them in. They feed them. It's a bit of a cultural tension. And by the way, even in places like Africa, there is poverty and middle class tension and some of the same attitudes here. Just because you're African doesn't mean you're exempt from prejudices and otherwise going both ways. But I saw that more this time than I think I've seen before. So this is a teen Sunday school group. And that's the church building, which again, by Zambian standards, is very nice. No air conditioning, no heating, but nice benches, nice facility there. That's the young adult, I think, Sunday school group. That's the outside of the building. This was considered very manicured, very well taken care of. You can usually, and if people have cars, it usually means they're middle class or up. So this is the to-be future pastor's parsonage house, which they are now housing the adult Sunday school in. So I went and visited through the different folks. And then this was the most precious, these little ones here. There they are having their Sunday school. This was the outside of that building. That's the loo. And that is kind of a new member's baptismal candidate. And this is Saidi, who is the pastor, the main preaching pastor there, who ended up at really being a great guy. I mean, I really liked Saidi. So they're having we would call it a child dedication, but basically committing the child and the parenting of the, it's not infant baptism or anything like that, but it is basically the parents committing themselves to raise this child in the fear and admonition of the Lord. There's a wonderful story of restoration or brokenness and restoration that I didn't even know the backstory behind it here. Really encouraged, one of the things that endeared me to the pastor himself is what he did in light of some of the circumstances that happened here that in Zambian culture you don't allow, and there's no grace toward, or very little grace toward, just a real testimony of his faithfulness to the gospel and his belief in grace. All right, so there's the church. Many of these pictures, when it comes to the church, I don't like to take pictures while people are in worship, so I wait until they pray, and so I'm not a distraction. I'll turn around and take a picture. So you'll see a lot of these pictures are when they're bowing. So preached there, and then went back to his home briefly to meet his wife. And there's my posse there. That's Peter and Kasango and... I just met that brother once. I can't remember his name. All right, and so that was Sunday morning. Sunday evening, I went to Ibex Baptist Church, which is a church plant of Kabwata, where Conrad and Bayway is. And you'll see some other fair-skinned folks back here. And if you recognize them, it's the Williamsons who came. They no longer attend any Reformed Baptist churches there because of some particular issues. They are regularly attending church, but they came here so we could see one another. And This is where they meet every Sunday. And this is in a garden area, which is basically used for weddings and parties and that kind of thing. So you'll come in on Sunday mornings, and there's beer bottles lying around everywhere. And they'll clean that up, and then that's where they have their worship morning and evening. I think that was while I was out on a run, early one morning. And then this will give you a sense. This is what will happen is in the compound areas, the heart of the compounds are where all of these, some of them are just plywood or whatever wood they can find, shanty houses. As you move out closer to the road, you'll have the merchants or people who have any kind of skills that will set up shop. And like this is the iron work area. So when you drive down this part of the road, they've kind of gathered together. There's really no, as far as I know, no government regulation of this. There's no quality control. It's just you got to know who to go to and what to get. Sometimes the construction's a little less than ideal, or the measurements aren't right, and you just have to figure out how to make it work. It's one of the things that the Williamsons have really struggled with, is there aren't a lot of standardized standards. So when you go by a door and you've been told it's yay wide and yay tall, and you go and you fit it there and it doesn't fit, you have to figure out how to work that. So you'll see more of the iron area, but they'll have market areas of fruit and vegetables, of iron works, of wood carvings, of bunk beds, of just these major sections. So it's like a big Walmart with all of these free market people creating. And then these would be little stands where you could get anything from SIM cards for your phone to Fanta drinks are really popular there. Some of these are little barber shops or beauty salons where you can get a nice fade, or you can get a weave. Weaves are very, very popular here. That gives you, sorry about that. And those are some of the better of the housing on the outside, but you'll see this all over the place where people will buy plots and they'll lay a foundation. And they don't have the money, so they have to store up over years and go plant, and they have maybe a family farm or a plant of a part of a hectare that they'll eventually build. And the whole idea is eventually I'm going to retire there. And if you can do that, that's pretty upscale. All right, so the topic that I taught at both schools was conformed to his images, to his image, biblical and practical approaches to spiritual formation. Emmisdale. Some of you know Isaac Makashini. He is the primary preaching pastor there. This is their church building facility. They're the host of LMC, Lusaka Ministerial College. And this is one of the first days. They're smiling, which is good. I don't think I've started teaching yet, so they're all still smiling. What's interesting with this particular group, what was interesting is from about here over were the Pentecostals, and from here over were the Baptists, with a sprinkling of a SDA. There was a Seventh-day Adventist to try to convert me there. We actually had an apostle there, and I know that because he put it on his paper, and I did flunk him. I've never flunked an apostle before, but I flunked an apostle for this class because he had great answers. Well, he had answers to questions that were very full of the Bible and truth, but they had nothing to do with the questions I was asking. It was just like, here's some things I want to say. So I don't know if there's demerit because of flunking an apostle, but I guess we'll find out. So that's Emmisdale. That's where I spent Monday through Friday for about 4 hours a day teaching. And some of you will recognize Isaac and his two little kids. Remember them? They ain't little kids anymore. We went out, this is at the Spur Cafe, which is kind of an American, Native American themed restaurant. Wonderful time with them. And this is Ronald Kalifungwa, who has my most favoritest name of any African I've ever met. Well, I don't know. Modestus Hakanyanga is a close second. But Ronald Kalifungwa, actually he's an incredibly happy and cheerful guy. But whenever you take his picture, he does that. I have no idea why. So he'll come in and say, "Hello, Stephen. How are you?" And yes, very good. How is your family? How did you travel? Well, yeah, here's a picture. But he's really a sweet, cheerful guy. He is pastor of probably the second largest Reformed Baptist church in the whole nation. Of Lusaka Baptist Church, is a very influential guy. But we've become friends over the years and just had a delightful lunch with him, and just a lot of encouragement during that lunch. These are not native Zambians. This is the Williamson family minus Sarah Catherine, that some of you know, who has visited with us recently. James and I, our friendship goes back 21 years, I think. First time the Platners ever visited our church was when James came and preached a conference, I think one of our first conferences that we hosted on humility, right? So it's James and Megan and the rest of their kiddos, I could probably name them, I think. But anyway, had supper with them, and then down here is one of Rick Kelly's girls from Louisville. She was there visiting. Oh, and Grace is down there at the end. So, went and had supper with them. Love his shirt. There's a strip of bacon here and a pig, and it says, "Bacon, I am your father." To which the bacon says, "No." So spent the evening with them, had supper with them, caught up quite a bit. Love them very, very much. The next day, afternoon, so here at LMC in particular, they had me speaking all day, and then usually in the evenings, I would go to a church plan or I go to a college, I would teach some other settings. This is the day that I went to African Christian University, which is a fairly new university. It started since I was there 3 years ago. They were piloting it back 3 years ago, and it's since launched. We need to pray for them. It's a great university with a comprehensive Christian worldview. It's one of the only ones, at least that I know of, in Zambia and Africa that really tries to take a full Christian worldview in implementation of that. Very influenced by Francis Schaeffer and Labrie and worldview Christianity. So went there to teach. And were they on break? It was a little smaller student body than normal, I think. But there they were. They asked me to come and do chapel. I taught the discipleship compass. And they're actually going to be working that into their curriculum and ask permission to use it. And the university is most associated with this fellow right here. Can anybody see who that is? It's Vodi Bakum. You heard that name? So Vodi, who is a humongous dude. I mean, this guy is humongous. So to have him sitting back there on the stoop listening to me teach, I was saying, oh boy. And then Kent Turnbull is the dean of the college. So taught there in the afternoon and then went and had lunch. So that's Isaac Makashini there, Kent Turnbull, and then there's Vodi Bakum. We had lunch together, and I'm telling you, his hands, I was just like, he could crush my skull. It's just, I was walking behind him, and just the breadth of his shoulders, he was like, what's that? I don't think so. Where? Compton. There you go. Anyway, had a great time with them. Was it that same evening or the next evening? I can't remember. Went and taught, again, the discipleship compass, just to pilot it and get feedback from it, to this church plant. Or is this Ibex? No, this was another church plant, I believe. So we had it there in the living room. Okay, so here are some interesting engineering. So if you can't quite tell what it is, these are handrails and these are steps. It looks like maybe they've started it and not finished, but this is the completed project. The rest of the steps and the handrails are on the inside of that wall. But they put those up and measured it and, you know, ordered it and purchased it and then brought it in. And then when they built the wall out to the foundation, they were about 6-8 inches off. So that handrail is supposed to be on the inside of the wall, so you have two going up on the inside, which is okay because there's no second story anyway. It's a staircase that just goes up into nothing right now. But So that's workable. But we pulled up on that and thought, I know what would be a great picture. Okay, so fast forward now, the last day. This is the president of the student body, I believe. And they have they're big about thankfulness and gratitude and giving gifts. And so there we are on the last day, Kasongo. And then they gave me a gift. And I've gotten everything from mixing bowls to shirts that don't fit quite right to skirts for Kimberly to all kinds of things. So it's always like, what are they going to do this year? Well, I got a copper-plated clock with fake tusks around it. It really is. It's a very, very nice gift. It almost made it home without getting broken. But no, they're not real tusks, so don't worry about that. But yeah, it's wood with a very thin copper, just a beautiful piece. There's a better picture of it. And the best part of the whole thing is they made me a doctor. So I just want to let you all know. And it's not medical either. It's just Dr. Stephen Gemmel. So that was, I don't think it was their fault, but whoever it was at the engravers thought they would throw that in. So I think it counts. So
it's honorary.
Honorary, that's right. That's right. All right, so there we are again. The last day finishing things up. Just delightful time. I did, because of the size of the class, there were a couple of interesting dynamics just with the Pentecostal group being there, and I was dealing a lot with unity in Christ, and so in that particular setting spoke a lot about our differences, what we agree in, because literally they would not sit together. I mean, it was just, and some of it, as I've identified and understood Zambian culture, it really depended on what missionaries got to. Zambia has like 72, 73 tribes total, language groups. And they do intermarry, and the first president did a good job at trying to unify. They've never had a civil war within the country, which is very unusual in Africa as a continent. Because of some of the things the first president did, other than selling the farm to foreign investors, but he had them intermarry, encourage them. One Zambia was a national pride, not a tribal pride, which really has helped them to care for one another. However, when missionaries first came in, missionaries would come, like the SDA would hit this tribe, and the Baptist would hit this tribe. And still, and it's almost like when I point that out to them, they go, oh, what? And then they eventually are like, yeah, I guess that's true. But they still have a bit of, there's, tribalism and denominationalism have like both kept hold and has been a problem. And so I asked the Pentecostals, like, what tribe are you guys from? And they were mostly from the same tribe. How about you Baptists? They were mostly from the same tribe. SDA, what tribe are you from? Uh-huh. Are most SDAs that? Yeah. I said, so you guys got some work to do as far as unity in Christ and those kind of things, and figure out what doctrinally is different and what is just culturally different. So that's the whole shebang there. And because of the size of the of that particular class, I didn't get as close to those men and to the ladies as I would like to have. I won't point out the apostle. All right, and then that's basically the administration minus Conrad and Bayway and Ronald Calafungwa. This is my least favorite part. Amen, teachers? Yeah. So there are the final exams, and I was behind on grading because they had me so busy. Getting grading done was difficult. Okay, so this is the last day. I'm checking out of Nomad's Lodge. There's Peter Kasongo, but also Kapui, who became a friend, who was the front desk worker. I was able to write a letter of recommendation to try to get him into a school that he needed help getting into, but it was a fine young guy that helped really take care of me. So this is the airport in Lusaka. This is the airport in Ndola. Much smaller, much, much smaller. And then this is my companion for the week. The first week I was by myself, mostly, except for my drivers. But this week I spent a whole week in this flat with Troy Kane from Australia. And I have met Troy 8-9 years ago, maybe, I'm thinking, something like that, at a pastor's conference in New Jersey. And you know those people you meet and immediately you know there's a connection? He was that guy. It wasn't just because of his cool accent. Troy's a very dear brother, went through some incredibly difficult church situations, almost lost his, I don't think he'd mind me saying, almost lost his mind, is still kind of recovering from that and trying to see the church move forward. But he went through some very, very difficult times. So it got fish again. This one was overcooked for my taste, but this was our first meal together and getting to go deeper and getting to know one another. He was just an incredible godly blessing. So the following Sunday then, we traveled 2 hours. So I was exhausted from the first week, traveled, got there, said, well, we have you preaching in the morning and it's only a 2-hour drive. So we went and they're meeting in a school. This is a church plant. Schools are very, very popular first steps for church plants. My driver just finished up his medical doctor degree. So he took me out there, and these are a couple of the men. And this is Matthews, who was one of my students back when we first started the school back 9-10 years ago. So he graduated, has gone on to be a church planner. This is him and his family. He's pastor at this church. Some other the folks that hadn't left yet. That's my driver, Dr. Driver. This is the seating arrangement so I can memorize the names. You can see this is a much smaller class. Here's Troy teaching. This is the same place we've been teaching for 10 years. This is CMC, Copperbelt Ministerial College. A smaller group than they expected, I think 18 or something like that out of 25 expected, but it was good because of a smaller, more intimate group. We got to spend more time together. And these guys, by and large, are sharp and godly and just real potential. They're more unified as far as what background they're coming from. Troy taught gospel and Gospels and Acts. And that school is hosted by Grace Reformed Baptist Church. The main preaching pastor there is Cabway Cabway. And I'll give you 3 guesses to tell you what city he's from. Cabway. Yeah, he's Cabway Cabway from Cabway. I don't know that his parents were the most creative. Or maybe they just really wanted to honor their village, their city. But this is Grace Reformed Baptist Church. Some of you who have been on this journey with me for this decade will know that when it first started, there was a foundation here in these rooms. Since then, the walls have gone up, the windows have gone in, the roof has gone on, and they've made incredible progress. This is a street that has, while they have carefully built over time, charismatic churches and then cults like Jehovah's Witnesses have, and large, hyper-charismatic churches have built up around them. There's a church with a prophet that meets right next door, and they actually decided that they hadn't purchased enough land, so built on some of Grace Baptist Church's land. But the way that it works there is politics and religions and prophets all intermingle together. It's tribalism. It's tribal leadership. And there's a great deal of certainty that though they have the survey, they know where their land is, they've built over on their land, but the prophet has political influence and is paying some people off so they can't get anything done. They can't get their land back. But that's the way that it is. As you can see, it's going to be a quite nice facility. This is the old kitchen. This is where I used to go and crouch during my breaks and watch them cook the fish. And they building several buildings now. The kitchen is now in their little lodge. That's the inside of the auditorium. And again, this would be considered, as far as Reformed Baptist Church, is one of the more prosperous. Those are some classrooms they're building out back. Those are the loos right around to the left. This is the jail for renegade preachers. It's just kind of in the back, some of the land that they use to grow and till things and sell. I'm not sure what that tower is, but that's the tower is right next to the lodge that they built where the students stay for the week. And here are my students. Raymond, very, very quiet, very sweet, encouraging. Seike, who is one of the sharpest guys I've ever met in my classes. Really, really sharp guy. Desire, who is one of the quietest guys I've ever known in my classes, but very encouraging. Butemwe, who is from the bush, very attentive. Simon, very engaged. Sangwani, really sweet guy. And Gilbert, who is a hoot. You can tell, can't you? You can just tell by his smile. Like, that guy's trouble. But he lived in Texas for several years, so I think we infected him some. But he's a good guy. Kennedy, who is hilarious. Big, cheerful, like when he laughs boisterously. Benwell, who is he's also very sharp, very quiet when he asks questions. Like this guy asks the questions that nobody else in the room wants to ask, but nobody else dares. Benwell, his questions are very simple and precise, but very insightful. Johnson, first day, he and I had a bit of a run-in together with one another. You can see he never smiles. Remember the other guy, Ronald? I said, you know, but he looks like this all the time. Even when he's laughing, he looks like this. But by the end of the week, he was one of my biggest supporters. I mean, he was really in. It took me a good bit to win his confidence. But by the end of the week, he was like, all in, give me everything you got. Harrison, quiet, sweet guy. Isaac is he's coming from a Dutch Reformed church. Can you imagine a Dutch Reformed church in Zambia? He comes from a Dutch Reformed church. He's just kind of auditing the classes. He has some special challenges, but very, very sweet guy. Andrew I've had before. And then these last two guys are probably the cream of the crop in regards to just intellect and education, that kind of thing. Joseph Peary, very cheerful guy, supportive in the back. And then Chipita. Chipita is hilarious. But these two guys are old school. They've been around a while. They've been exposed and taught. And they're kind of the gatekeepers at the back of the class to make sure I don't run off the rails, you know, so to speak. So that's what it looks like from my view. See, I told you, he doesn't smile. So the Australian, the American are smiling, but not Johnson. Johnson, yeah, well, there's almost, you can see some teeth. That's ear to ear grinning there. Chipita saying goodbye, last meal. And Enshima, some of you will remember Enshima, which is cornmeal. And there's Kennedy. See, you see on Kennedy. There's my lodge. It's actually very, very nice. And I've been staying there several years. What's really fun is I've been there for several years, and I haven't been there in 3 years. And when I got out of the car, the servants and the people who were there, they don't know my name, but they're like, ah, you know, I'm like, hey, how's it going? You know, and Troy's like, you know, why? It's weird. So I'm American. So anyway, just really, really fun getting to see these guys. The owners are going to be selling. But that's, you know, it's embarrassingly, it's what I get to stay in. But again, here's God's Will Restaurant. So, you know, you're supposed to eat there. And it's now open, lest there was any question. This is out on the way. This is actually the two-hour drive on the way out to the school church I told you about. So I think those are chickens there. If you need some supper, you can stop by there. A little nicer place. This is the Farmhouse Mini Mart. This is out in the mine area up in the Copper Belt. This is some of the what they pull out, what they basically mine the stuff out of, and this is the what would you call it? The what is it? one of those things. But you'll find people out there digging through that to try to find pieces of copper or other things, and there'll be avalanches, there'll be collapses, and they'll die out there. Another morning run. This is Peter, who I've known for I think the entire 10 or 11 years that I've gone, and he stopped by to say hi. Troy, and this is the one of the administrators for Copperbelt College. I've known him for several years now as well, and he's actually getting married. He invited me to come back for the wedding earlier next year. So we had Debonair's Pizza, and then there's the class. And also you have Pastor Cobway here, who's basically the president, the dean of the school as a whole. This next one is of the administrators, so it's Kennedy, Katongo, Cobway, myself, Troy, and then Stephen. And if you want to know Stephen's personality, just look at him. Like head to toe, that's Stephen. He's very proper, very proper. What great memories. The day I was getting ready to leave, this is the work they're doing. They just mix up the concrete, the cement. They're pouring pillars for a kind of a balcony in the back. Work still going on there. Last day, exams are over. Students have left, feeling a little melancholy. I really felt like I belonged there this time for some reason, more deeply than 3 years ago. But had some melancholy, sadness leaving. I think it's another picture of us eating. Yeah, final supper, guys are getting ready to go, eating. This is, I got to tell you about Violet. Violet is the doorkeeper of the Lord. She has been there ever since I've started going there. She is a widow. She is the primary cook for all the guys there. She lives in this. This is right here. This is that other church building I was telling you about that came over on their property, encroaching on them. This is Violet's residence. Sweet, humble servant of the Lord, loves serving these men. And then one of the final nights, this is Twandi, and you'll see in the next picture his wife Teleke. Twandi and Teleke become good friends over the years. Billy is a new elder at this church. Twandi has now been, he was a deacon for years. He's now one of the fellow elders with Cobway. That's his wife Billy and his wife Jane. I just met them for the first time. He also teaches at a college. So Twandi and then his wife Teleke and their house servant and one of their daughters. I knew them before they had children, and now they've got two children. But I've known Twandi and Teleke for a number of years, had supper with them. So it's Twandi, Teleke, Billy, and Jane. And there are the final exams, which I wasn't behind this time. And then these are two of the house servants at the Nomad Lodge and what is the name of the second lodge? Oh, well. But these are two of the guys I've gotten to know over the years. I gave them a tip at the end just to say thank you. The lodge is either going to be sold or closed. The owners have been there a number of years, and they're retiring. So this may have been the last time I see these guys. But very, very cheerful. Just make sure, if you don't want them to come in your door, you need to make sure to lock it. Because they will come in and, you know, carry your towels and things like that. And you're like, well, hey, can I have one of those? And then here's the plane, the big bird that got me back to Washington. 20-something hours on that big bird. All right. That's it. So thank you for your prayers. I want you to know that I made it clear everywhere I went that I go as a representative for you. This is not my ministry. This is your ministry. I just happen to be the mouthpiece that goes on your behalf. And I think investment in those leaders, investment in those pastors can have an impact, is having an impact. I've seen it over this last decade through these two different schools. that these men are planting churches in hard places. They're planting churches in major cities. And Zambia, it is said by many, has one of the greatest Christian influences in all of Africa. And many missionaries are actually being sent out to Botswana and the Congo and other places from here. So this investment of you're sending me to invest in these men is a very crucial gospel investment. And so thank you for the privilege of allowing me to get away, of financing that through your tithes and offerings, of enabling me to go. It is just genuinely, truly a privilege to be able to go there. We've got about 3 minutes. Could we pray? Would you please pray for these men that have been invested in these churches? And then I'll close this. So, Lord, we entrust these men, their churches, their families, their wives and children to you. We entrust the whole nation of Zambia that can be a light set on a hill in Africa, in places that are very dark and tribal and warring, and men are hateful and hating one another. Lord, please would you stay the tide of Islam there? Would you please bring unity among the churches of Jesus Christ for the sake of his name? And would you please continue to prosper CMC and LMC to train up those who would go and to preach the gospel to their nation and to all the nations? Thank you for the good health, the enjoyment that I had being able to go, the joy and the delight in being there. Thank you for the prayers of your people, the support, the tithes and offerings, and the ability to be able to go and to be a representative and ambassador for our local church. And ask, O Lord, that you would still yet do abundantly above all that we could ask or think for that nation, for the continent of Africa, and for all the nations. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.